good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined once again by Brian, our sustainability expert at the monastery, who, for those of you who did join us, I suppose it was 2 or 3 weeks ago now, he was on to give us a fabulous update, but the signal was terrible, and so the sound quality just didn't carry through at all. So we're going to essentially pretend that we didn't have that interview and try it again. So welcome back, Brian.
Thanks for having me back yet again. Hopefully technology cooperates today.
Oh, you are crystal clear today. So
yes.
Score. So I thought, yeah, at least we'd start by kind of summarizing what you were telling us last time, and then you can move on to tell us if there's anything new.
Let's see, what was I talking about last time? Oh, yes, happy trees. Happy, happy, happy trees.
Exactly.
It's one of those things that's very hard for me to put into words how excited I am about it, actually. I get very excited about things that other people don't necessarily find excited, like compost. But trees, everybody loves trees, right? And so I get very, very, very excited about that. And actually, I think trees are on the hillside now. The nitrogen-fixing trees brought up, and there are 7 of them. It's a carob, 3 blackwood acacias, and 2 willow acacias. Maybe another blackwood acacia. I don't know. That doesn't add up to 7, but I don't remember exactly what's up there.
I think you're right. I think there are 7. Yeah.
And for me, looking at them, and they're super happy now. It was my first time ever planting trees, and it's in clay soil, which is, from my research, and a great opportunity for misfortune for tree roots and whatnot. And they seem to be super happy. They're growing. Some of the acacias are starting to do kind of their adult phase foliage and whatnot, so they're very happy where they are. And it's a real interesting lesson for me in kind of like in success and how conditioned mind can frame success. Because there are 7 trees up on the hillside. I planted, I think, somewhere like 200 trees last year to get those 7 trees. You know,
like in your setup where you're doing the seedlings and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I didn't have that then. So my germination rates were a little bit lower, but I had at one point about 50 trees. I was like, yeah, look at all these trees. And then they all started dying to various maladies and, you know, slugs and mites and fungus and, you know, all sorts of things that are somewhat outside of your control when you're trying to grow things in a city environment. And, you know, what's happening in the neighbor's yard has a big impact on yours and whatnot. Okay. And so I got to spend kind of a whole year and a half of just getting the information again and again and again and again and again that this is really not being successful.
Well, and I'll bet, speaking of getting the information, I'll bet you have a whole lot more information now than you did at the beginning of that endeavor.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I got 1 out of 20 carob seeds to germinate. And, you know, the blackwood acacia is the big one that's up there. For the longest time, I thought that was going to be the only one I had because I planted 40 of them, and that was the only seed that germinated. And I had to dig, you know, I was like, what's happening in this tray? Nothing's going on here. And I'm digging through, and I find 1 little germinated seed, and I planted that in the best pot I could get. You know, I kind of had no idea what was going on, but high spirits, you know, thought I'm going to do this.
Go ahead, sorry. Keep going.
And just getting the constant information that I'm doing it wrong and it's not going to work and people are going to be upset and...
And none of it was true.
As far as I can tell, none of it's true. When I go up on the hill now and I see those 7 trees, that looks like a big success to me.
Exactly. And, you know, as you were talking, I was just thinking, you know, look at any one of the, thousands and thousands and thousands of trees we have on the property here. And any given oak or pine is dropping how many seeds? You know?
Yeah, just...
And I was looking at one of the huge oaks just the other day and thinking, oh, my gosh, this thing came from an acorn.
Mm-hmm.
And then how many of those acorns turn into that tree? 1 in, I don't know, you know, what the figure is, but so yeah, I mean, they don't all germinate. And I love that point of that conditioning wants to make it into everyone that germinates and becomes a tree is success, and anyone that doesn't is a failure, and that's a complete illusion. That's such a false distinction.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, so much of what we do in life, we don't have all of the information. And at every stage along the way, there's always that voice that's happy to pretend that it knows everything about what's going on and all of the ways that you're doing it wrong. And so for me, that's just going up on that hillside and seeing those trees is just this reminder, like, you know, I really need to be asking where is this information coming from quite often. And, you know, this morning I was out in my little garden and looking at all the plants that I have for the next round, and it's going through the same process, and I'm still listening to the same voices. You know, it's, if I look at it in absolute terms, I have a lot more prospects now than I did at this point last time. But when I'm looking at some plants that aren't doing so well, it's still like, oh, this is all going wrong. I should just hang it up.
And yet, looking at those seven trees up there is the reminder that you say of, I really need to be questioning where that information is coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. And just sort of the myopic focus of it is what was really striking me this morning. You know, when I think about the trees that are growing on the monastery now, I'm hoping, you know, 50 or 100 years from now, residents and retreatants are going to be enjoying the shade of those trees and, you know, enjoying the fruit trees that they're helping to nurture. And that's sort of the scale, this kind of broader picture that I like to keep in mind, that I find fulfilling, that makes me really enjoy what I'm doing in life.
Yep.
And when it's looking at it day to day, well, this little bit of effort hasn't paid off over this tiny time frame, therefore you are these things. You know, there's always a way to frame it so that you're losing and it's not fun and it's not working. And so keeping that big picture in mind is what makes it sustainable for me as a project.
I love,
you know,
that
which
connection.
Is,
yeah, that's right. That's it, isn't it? That's what makes it sustainable for you as a project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's so good. You know, because I just watch in myself as you're saying that, one of the impacts it has for me is I appreciate those trees even more. Knowing what went into creating them, it's so easy to see, okay, yeah, Brian brought those pots and he planted them on the hill and there are some trees, neat. Oh. But to realize how much care, attention, love, and chance went into it. And, you know, what is the, you know, percentage that this one would have germinated and become this tree? And then we can bring that same appreciation to everything around us, and the miracle that any of it is growing, that any of it turns into what it turns into, is just such a much more fun perspective than that failure one that, as you say, conditioning wants to drag us down into.
Yeah, and it's you know, for me, looking at anything in the world, you know, it's how many quote unquote failures went into any given success.
Yeah.
You know, because anything that works in life, there were a whole lot of ways that didn't work that were discovered before that one was found out.
That's a great point. Yeah.
You know, and somebody had to, most likely going through the same experience we're all going through, hear those voices telling them it's not working, and for whatever reason, bless them, not listen and persist. And that's why we have the world that we have, as flawed as it can seem at times.
I was just reading something recently about the process of humans discovering what's edible. Talk about trial and error.
Yes. That blows my mind.
And the tenacity to keep hang in there and do that process. Well, yeah.
Yeah, that absolutely blows. Like when I hear about the preparation methods that indigenous peoples in various places had for the stuff around them, like, how would you discover that? You know, acorns, for example, you have to mash them up and then pour hot water through them to leach out various toxins and whatnot, and then do other cooking. And it's like, I would starve to death well before I found out any of those things. So some people had some serious willingness.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So just what a fun process it is in this whole, I mean, in everything we're doing, of course, but it's so tangible in the sustainability work of just trying this out, trying that out. You know, so now we have the aquaponics tank, I guess that's what you would call it, huh? Up on the porch. And, you know, again, just step by step, we're doing that. I think the next thing is we're going to get fish for it, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Get some fishies, get some plants, and get it moving. And that's, you know, another one of those fun things, kind of like where you focus, right? Because, you know, we have this aquaponics system sitting there, and it's the water's cycling through and whatnot, and it doesn't have any fish or plants in it. And it's like, well, what's going on there? But what's actually, as Eric points out, the main thing that you're doing in an aquaponics system is raising bacteria. And so just having the system set up and having water cycling through it is creating the conditions for bacteria. And we're fortunate to have some growing medium that was actually used before, so it already has the right types of bacteria there. And, you know, we're supporting that kind of life. And so today, I was just actually preparing a new batch of seeds for a new set of trees to go up on that hill and inoculating them with bacteria. So I actually purchased sort of, you know, packaged bacteria to put on my seeds because it's the right type of nitrogen fixers that are going to form the symbiotic relationships with the little root nodules that actually fix nitrogen out of the air. They're turning air into fertilizer, these bacteria, which is one of the most essential processes for all terrestrial life is nitrogen fixation. And so just to have a sense of the broader system, that it's not just the things that you see, but it's also the things that you don't see, is really fun for me.
Yeah. Boy, I really, really agree. And I know I say it every time, but there's so much gratitude for your willingness and, your perseverance to be one of those people who's in there and not willing to listen to the voices, let them do their thing, but just keep doing it, keep going on. And also to be an advocate for it up at the monastery. You know, it's something that we've all wanted to do forever, but it really takes someone who's willing to say, okay, I'm that person who's going to take it forward and make it happen. So it's really fabulous that you're willing to be that person. So many thanks for that.
Many thanks for the opportunity.
Hey, we'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
All righty, cheers.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Bye-bye. Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Hello, Michael. How are you doing?
Great, great. How are you?
Good. I love to hear that sustainability stuff.
Yeah.
It just makes my heart sing. And it's true. Everything we just heard is so very, very true. All of that trial and error and all of that tenacity and patience. So many of these projects that are happening now are things that we have sort of dreamed about forever. And as Jen said, we just didn't have the people power. We didn't have the person who stepped forward to say, I'm gonna take that on. And so the projects just sort of remain out there in the periphery. And now starting to see them come together is just really thrilling. That whole planting trees business, I have an ambition. It makes me want to be a little modern Johnny Appleseed, just getting more and more trees growing everywhere that we can find a place to encourage one to grow. And it is fun and it's exciting.
Yeah, it's great. I'm looking out the window at trees right now and they're waving at me. And
oh, yeah, there's nothing like them. They are. I think the trees are the ultimate life form.
Uh-huh.
So probably if we're very, very fortunate in the rebirth cycles of things, we can look forward to being a tree at some point.
Yeah.
No, they really are the perfect life form. I mean, they just give and give and give and give. you know, home to creatures and shade and fruit and beauty, and they're marvelous, marvelous things. And of course, we have with our modern lifestyle, the way too often trees are considered to be expendable. They're in the way. We want to do something, and so that tree has to go, and we don't think enough in terms of replacing them. And of course, our planet does not do well without trees. So I'm excited. We have 320 acres, and as we keep going, we can add more and more and more trees, and the land thrives with it. We thrive. Everyone benefits. Good.
It's a win-win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in such a big way.
Great, yeah, which seems to be the result often with practice, is that everybody ends up winning.
Yes, yeah. And so with the trees, there's the food forest that that Brian is putting up on the hill. The garden itself, the fenced-in part of the garden, is getting a lot of attention now. As I think we've talked about, we're looking forward to having a labyrinth that's going to go in just below the garden.
Great.
So there are lots of really, really nice, things that are happening on that property that, again, we've dreamed about forever. And now they're starting to become realities. And it feels good to be a part of the giving, and that's what it feels like. You know, we receive so much from everything and everywhere all the time, but thinking particularly of the monastery and that land, it's just given us so much, and to take care of it in that way and to do what feels like giving back to it is great practice and heartwarming.
Yes. Yes, it is. Feels good to take care.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, you know, California woo-woo things, I suppose. But it's an energy deal.
Yeah.
And anybody who has been to the monastery feels the energy that's there. And it's not just that it's a beautiful piece of land. It is that, goodness knows. But I think it's that reciprocal relationship that we have. People are there who love it. People are there doing expansive, compassionate, kind work. We try to take care of the land and all that's on it in that respectful, kind way, and I think that energy that's going back and forth is felt by everyone who comes there, or everyone who's open to experiencing it anyway. And we just want to do more and more and more of that, and that place becomes then a model for how we can live with nature in a way that supports, cares for all, not just how we would like things to be. It's true that we have a garden where we're growing flowers and vegetables and that sort of thing, and the vast majority of the land is just tended, but left to what grows naturally in that climate. And so we take out, you know, dead brush and that sort of thing and assist everything that's there in that way, and then huge parts of it we leave exactly as it is, so the creatures can have homes, and even the wood rats, there's a place for them. Feels good.
Great. I have some announcements here, Sherry.
All right.
If folks don't want to and don't feel like it, they should really join you and Ashwini in Pennsylvania for the I Don't Want To, I Don't Feel Like It retreat on the East Coast.
Yes, Transcending Resistance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be based on your latest book.
Yes. Yes,
and
indeed.
September 4 through 8. And spots are filling quickly for the September There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great first retreat and also excellent to repeat again and again.
Yes, it is. And I will tell you, you'll be among the first to have this piece of information.
Okay.
That we had a great time with some of our There's Nothing Wrong With You facilitators last week doing a whole training and going over the curriculum and just looking at details and da-da-da-da-da. And what we got to is the advanced retreat. So, you know, we've had a series of advanced retreats. The first one was What You Practice. And then we have Transcending Resistance. And the retreat next year is going to be a There's Nothing Wrong With You 2. So that people who have done There's Nothing Wrong With You and done these other retreats will now be able to return to that work at a completely wholly different and deeper level.
Great.
Yeah, so if people haven't done the first one or haven't done it in a while, it would be good to do before the next big one comes along.
Great. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yep.
So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to find out more and to sign up for any of these events.
Mm-hmm. Now, Michael, has the registration for the email class closed? I know the first class went out today. But I think if people usually, they give a couple of extra days. So if somebody is, you know, hearing those voices, tell them what a failure they are for having missed the deadline. I bet it's not too late if you send in a request. You'll be welcomed on board, and the class that went out today will be forwarded on to those people. Probably today, maybe tomorrow, but I bet for sure today.
Great. And so those folks would send an email to information@livingcompassion.org?
I guess
so.
That's
the best way.
Yeah, probably so. Probably so, yeah.
Okay. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So here we go.
Here we go.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael, this is Jen in Pennsylvania.
Well, hello, Jen.
How are you doing? I'm doing very well. I was so excited. I am so excited about the email class. I was like lurking around my inbox for that first one to come today. It was very exciting.
I tell you what, I am excited about it. That's why I did that little plug for if somebody missed the deadline. I think this it has potential, doesn't it? First class. I thought that first class was a stunner, if I do say so myself.
I'm with you. I'm having a very fun time practicing with it so far. So thank you so much to you and everybody who offers that. Yeah, I'm already having an amazing time. So that bodes well.
Good.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to, I endeavor to call something like, you know, about once a month, either to the Thursday show or the Tuesday show. It just, it's a great commitment to keep for this person, or conditioning can get me off by myself rather, you know, in a not great way. So tonight was a night that I could call this particular place. So I wanted to call in and just participate and be with Sangha. So
yeah, that's a good point. We often hear from people that the voices will tell them, well, you don't have anything to talk about, so you can't call in.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. If we only went to, say, a sitting group when we had some burning issue, there would be no sitting groups. Because in fact, we don't have those kinds of burning issues that often, much as the voices would like to convince us that we do. Mm-hmm. And so the reason that we connect with Sangha is to connect with, be supported by, and to support Sangha. That's it. So if we all got together and just sat there,
that would be plenty. If nobody had anything that they wanted to talk about, it would be plenty just to be together. Because when we're together, we're not listening to karmic conditioning.
Yes. Yeah.
Or we're listening less, maybe.
Or listening less. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, supporting that which supports the heart. That phrase has always just connected so much for me, resonated so much for me in this practice, just showing up and participating and supporting that which supports the heart. So, yeah, it feels like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So anything in particular going on in practice now that we've decided that we don't have to have anything in particular?
Right. I was going to say, and I have been looking at a few things, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, so one place I've been looking is meditation. I think at least what I thought I heard at some point was another conversation with someone where you were inviting them to kind of, I think maybe meditation was maybe one of their Learning to Love Learning projects or something like that, but just looking at what is meditation really, and what is that experience, and something about at least what I heard in that was just really exciting and fascinating. And I don't know, I'm looking at meditation. I recently had a chance to check in and get some guidance that I think, you know, like so many things, meditation was really handed over to conditioning. And, you know, I'll be a good, right person. I think I'm a one, by the way, for the class. But
I think so, Jen.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll good, right people meditate. So I'm going to make sure that I check this off my list every day. And I mean, there definitely was a feeling of such benefit, even maybe coming from that space. I mean, I'm grateful to that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was a place to get me meditating. It's nothing like wrong about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It got me there and all that. And I did notice all those things, like, gosh, life just works better, you know, when I sit down and take this time, even if, you know, it does feel that the experience is maybe, you know, just thinking the entire time until I can't wait to get up and go run around and do all the things conditioning says I have to do or whatever. So, so anyway, the guidance that I heard was just an opportunity to look at being really, really working with staying with the breath rather than I just sit down and meditate so I can say that I did that. It's been very fun to play with because it feels like it's coming from a really different place, like curious and wanting to have that spaciousness. And just a couple of times there's been this really, I had this one just really beautiful experience, and I don't know, I can just keep kind of looking around for it or what, I, you know, or not, I don't know, but just of just like being in love with the breath, and just I couldn't wait for the next, I don't know, neat thing. So, but just wanting to, I guess, work with that, the counting and not in a contest way was what I heard in the guidance, not to make it like, oh, I didn't do the right way this time, there's no right way, but just to see what's really possible in terms of learning to direct my attention to the breath. So just been looking at it and wanted to talk about it a little or whatever. So,
Well, there are a couple of things about that. One conversation I know that somebody we've had recently was learning to love sitting.
Yeah.
Learning to love it, which is kind of a, from what you say, And what you're articulating is an experience that an awful lot of people have. There's so much right and wrong about it. It's really a miserable experience to sit down and meditate. And so to learn to love it, to learn to love just sitting there, because that's really all we're doing. We're just sitting there. And then the second piece of it is, as you say, to kind of fall in love with the breath. What is this breath? This thing that is making it possible for me to be alive and enjoy and do all of the things that I enjoy and do. So what is that breath? Really to be with it and learn from it, be guided by it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other conversation that I'm in with someone is, I want to really count the breath. Not, as you say, I get some sort of extra points if I do and not if I don't, but can I actually stay with the breath and count? So if I'm going to sit for a half an hour, can I actually count every breath for half an hour? And to practice with that, kind of like I want to play the violin. And so I'm going to practice until I can do that. And one, this conversation that I'm in with this person who decided, I've been a meditator for years, I'm going to see if I can actually count the breath through the whole period. And what he said, you know, I'm going to see if I can do that, because I've never done that. And then the next time I talked to him, he said, you know, I did it and it actually wasn't that hard. I had just never tried to do that before.
Wow. That's neat,
whole,
yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing is so powerful, because, of course, conditioning would have us believe that, well, I haven't done it because I can't do it.
Yeah.
Rather than, well, actually, I haven't done it because I was listening to information that said I can't, and then I decided to do it, and I did it, and it wasn't even hard.
Wow.
I think we can apply that little formula to just about everything in life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's great. That's very inspiring. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and so there's so much to do in a meditation period. It has nothing to do with all of the stuff that the voices of ego, identity, karmic conditioning, self-hate would want us to focus on. Lots of entertainment, lots of enjoyment to be had, just learning to love sitting.
Well, I'm on it. I'm excited. So
yeah.
Thank you for that.
Let's all do that.
Yes, that sounds great. So
I think it's part of the preparation for being treated, actually.
Ooh, yeah.
Because isn't that when you just sit and look at a tree, that seems to be, they seem to have mastered that. That just being and breathing and enjoying and serving.
Yes. Oh, thank you for bringing that in. Yes, I'm also a great lover of trees, so that's a really fun element to bring to it, too. Yeah, it's part of it's a good being a tree practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful. Well, I am my time, so thank you so much.
Thank you for checking in.
All right. I can't wait to see class two.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay,
good night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Having some technical challenges here.
Hello?
Oh, Sherry. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Brilliant. You were showing still as muted. This technology stuff is crazy, isn't it?
It really is. It is. And, yeah.
Yes.
The information we get and what's actually so and what's going on behind the scenes and all of that, I think, is a little on the iffy side.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But,
hey, welcome back.
Yeah, we're grateful that it works as well as it does.
Yes. And it's a little slow in responding today, so We'll hope
well,
for that.
I have those days, don't you?
Yes, indeed. Okay, let's talk to another caller.
Okay.
Hello.
Oh,
oh hi.
Hi, guys. It's Tree Davy.
Hey. Whew.
How are you?
Thanks for speaking up.
No, I just heard that you are unmuted, and I was like, I better say hello really quickly.
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Great.
So I'm calling.
Tell us what's going on.
Yeah. I'm calling because I am in a combination of, I feel like, a perfect practice opportunity because the voices are going completely crazy, which is I feel I'm in this place where I feel 100% stuck. And just real quick to jump into content, it's in relationship to what I should do next with my life. Should I leave my job? What should I do? What would all of these different things? And what I'm seeing is coming up is just a whole lot of fear in relationship to making the right or wrong decision. And, of course, I've talked to, you know, a decent number of people and gotten their opinions. So I have the voices. I have my friends' opinions in my head. And I have to tell you, for the last 4 days, have lied in bed and stared up at the ceiling and almost just cried because I was like, I have no clue. But I will say that today I was just like, what do I need to do in this moment? I went, you know what? The best thing that I can do is get up, go exercise, and meditate and do yoga. I was like, and just be quiet, you know, and not ask any more questions. But I feel really stuck, and I'm not quite sure what to do about that.
Uh-huh. Okay. So is it, first of all, I think it's a great opportunity to be completely stuck.
Okay.
You know, it's like you're driving around lost,
yes,
going up one street and down the other, and then you come to a dead-end street. And it's like, well, all right. Now I must face the fact that I really am lost, right? Because I've just, there's no more street. So I'm serious. I think it's a good place to be in practice because clearly you've seen that the going back and forth, should I this, should I that, should I this, should I that, it only has so much shelf life. And then the process itself becomes the problem. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is no longer should I do this or should I do that. It's the should I, shouldn't I itself.
Yes. Yeah.
That is the difficulty that you're facing. Yeah? Is that?
No, that's completely, yeah.
Okay. I'm worn out from the process at this point. We get to the place where it almost doesn't matter. Just decide something. Just decide something so that we can get off of this teeter-totter. So let me ask you a little bit about the content. Are there choices in front of you? Is it like, take this job, don't take that job, or is it that straightforward?
What's really interesting is about 2 weeks ago, I wasn't able to go on the retreat that you guys just had at the monastery, and I was so looking forward to it, but couldn't make it happen. So I decided to do a mini retreat for myself, and I disconnected. I took time off of work, and I disconnected, like, my internet, and I got up in the morning, and I meditated every day, and created as much as the privileged environment that I could make since I wasn't able to be on retreat, and walked outside and was kind of silent, but just got out and active, and there was something that occurred to me in that the first day I was like, that's what I should do, and it felt really good. And then, of course, as the week went on, and the voices just came in, and then when I started thinking, could I really do this? That sounds crazy. And then, you know, there was all the chatter, and I think, you know, right now, just on the content side, it's a combination of, do I leave this job and search for another job? Do I leave this job and just take time off and try to figure out what I want to do next? Because I think the place that feels content-wise stuck is, I don't quite know what I want to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is that I enjoy where I'm at, but there are some challenges, and I'm kind of ready to move on. So do I stay in this place where I feel kind of a growing unhappiness until I figure out the next thing? Or do I just decide to leave this and see what shows up? But, you know, how am I going to manage that if I don't have another job right away? And can that be okay? So you can see how it's like, oh, there's just so much there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you have a sense with this, again, kind of parallels what we were just talking about, that the main thing that's happening with this is the dissatisfaction that you feel from the indecision?
Yes, it's a combination of that and feeling frustrated that I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know what my next step is. And that, to me, it's like if I had the direction and the vision, I would be like totally fine. But the fact that I feel like just staring and I got nothing is really hard. And ideas pop up, you know, and then I go explore them. I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. And then another idea pops up. Oh, I don't know about that. And so then I go, okay, well, there's something else then going on here. Because it's not that I don't have ideas. So is it that, are the voices kind of, am I in too much of a relationship there, getting talked out of trying anything at this point, you know, because then it becomes what's the right thing to do versus just picking something.
Right. So, yes. Okay. That's very good, isn't it? So the first point is that you're actually not unhappy where you are, except that there's this growing pressure to know what to do next. Right? So if you knew that there is a next and you knew that you don't know what that is, could you be happy where you are and just go on exploring possibilities, trusting that when the time is right, the next thing will appear for you?
Yeah, I think I could. I think when I've thought about that and go, you know, use this time to explore, the thing that comes up that I feel is the other challenge, which, you know, is what it is I'm also being asked to step up in my job in a certain way and be a part of something that I actually realize I'm not interested in, and to participate and be invested and support a direction that, though I'm happy with my specific job, there's this other area, and every time I'm pulled into this, it kind of highlights my desire to want to move on and do something else. So I'm in this, how much can I manage this other piece that I'm not completely invested in and give myself the time to do this without driving myself crazy and, you know, just feeling utterly miserable?
And are you saying that it feels that it would be unfair to where you work if you were to move into this area temporarily just because that's the next thing there, knowing that you are looking for something else? Would it be unfair to them, or is it just that you're really not interested?
I think it's a combination. I think it's, I feel we're being asked in this moment to make this commitment as leaders in the organization. And I'm sitting in these meetings and I'm just going, I don't have it. I don't have it. And I know that I'm one of the people they're really depending on. And how there's a part of me that goes, can I just fake it until I figure it out? But unfortunately, that is just not my personality. So that's where I'm going. But then I come to work today, and when I'm doing, if we were to segment out my job, 75% of the piece I'm totally fine and great and I love. There's this 25%. That is the piece they want us to grow, that I'm just going, oh, I can't. If I did everything else except for that, I would be fine with figuring out the next piece and waiting. But it's this piece that keeps growing that is really causing, I think, the desire to figure it out quickly, which is where that pressure is coming. Well, figure it out now, because this is you can't handle this.
So, you know, for me, these kinds of life situations are there. Now, I don't actually know why they're there. I suppose because that's how life is. But what they seem to provide for us is the opportunity to build trust and to build satisfaction with what is.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if it weren't for the voices creating urgency and difficulty. You would be just cruising along here. Sounds like, you know, being paid to do something that you really don't mind at all doing.
Yeah.
While you're being open to life kind of moving around and getting into position for your next whatever it is, which is not in place yet, clearly, because it hasn't come forward for you. Yeah? So that's the trust piece of it, that life unfolds, and it unfolds perfectly, and its timing is impeccable and exquisite. And what we are part of it is to be ready and patient. So it's not patient in a complacent or lazy is the word that I keep coming up. That's not the one I mean, but kind of a, whatever. It's not that. I mean, we're there, we're ready, we're kind of at the starting gate, but with an understanding that we can't make something happen that isn't happening.
Yep.
So it's the image for me is being in traffic. You know, you can take advantage of the openings that are there, but you can't actually make openings.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't know if that's helpful at all, but
for me, it
actually is the kind of spiritual practice training piece of this, because if we allow ourselves to be kind of bulldozed by the voices of urgency and something wrong and dissatisfaction and projecting out into the future more dissatisfaction and that sort of thing, then the next job comes along and they will be doing the same thing to you in that situation that they're doing now.
No.
They want us to think that they won't, because you'll find the perfect situation and then they'll be satisfied and leave you alone. And of course, they're not going to do that.
Absolutely. Can I ask real quick, in those moments where there's this other piece of my job that shows up, or where the voices have the most energy of like, oh my God, if I have to sit through one more meeting like this, or I have to have this person say this to me and I so disagree with this, which is where the I have to figure it out, I have to leave, I have to go, I can't do this. What can I do in that moment? I mean, I guess I just, in saying it out loud, I go, just breathe and mentor myself and be there. Like, that seems like that's what you do.
And the thing about it's even better than that. Yes, the mentoring. Yes, absolutely. But it's also an opportunity to practice all of the principles of practice that we like to avoid whenever we possibly can. So what is it like to disagree with something and to be open to all of the possibilities that are putting that in place? So how can you let go of the beliefs and assumptions that you have, to be open to somebody else's perspective because somebody thinks this is a good idea? Right. So can you be open to what that is, still realizing how you see it, use skillful means to communicate what is helpful in the situation, and in the meetings to practice meditation. It's a whole kind of a crash course in being what you want the world to be.
Wow, that's exactly. Oh my gosh!
Isn't that so much?
Yes. That's perfect. Thank you so much, Sherry. And I have taken so much time, so I should jump off now. But thank you.
All right. Let us know how it goes.
Oh, absolutely. I will.
All right. Good.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Calling.
And and good luck to getting the next caller on. I'm rooting for them. All right.
Come back on if we don't get anybody, okay?
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Sri Devi. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, my technical challenges have continued here.
I'm seeing text messages going flying back and forth to all the tech people behind the scenes, and it's not looking good, is it?
No, you and I are still talking, which is good. My screen went blank completely.
Again, we all know those places.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If only the mind would go blank so easily.
Shall we call it a night, Michael?
That's what I'm thinking. I tried to bring up this same window again, and it says it's waiting for...
I know, you're refreshing like crazy, and it's not that refreshing, huh?
Let me try one last thing here. I appreciate your willingness and everyone else who's hanging in there. Nothing seems to be working. I went back to the main talk show page and started fresh, and I'm still blank. It's waiting for talkshow.com.
Okay, well, then we will say adieu.
Adieu.
And we will try this again next week. How about that?
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
Yeah, and thank you for all your efforts, and I've enjoyed what we've had so far.
Me too. It's been great.
All right. Thanks,
Thank
Michael.
You, Sherry.
Bye-bye.